Love lights all fires. This is Instant Inspiration. Dr. Herbert O. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. Love lights all fires. Now, we say, well, really now, I have a lot of fires that come to mind that are not so cool. You know, like arson fires, or fires with burn down houses, or destroy property in any way. That's not so cool. Love lights those fires? Yes, it does. Love is the only source of illumination for anything, for any fire, for any activity. But what we are looking at this statement about love lights all fires is the statement of inspiration, the fire of inspiration, the fire of imagination, the fire of creativity, the fire of delight and enjoyment in life and the world, and in the people around us. That's the fire that we're speaking about here. I mentioned the negative fires to you first because that is what comes to most people's mind first. Right away, boom, they're off on the negative fire. But now, we set that aside. We're not solving that mystery right at the moment. But we are solving the mystery at the moment about love lighting all imagination. Love lights all creativity. Love lights all desires within anybody for anything that's high and beautiful and good. How does love do that? How does love light the torch under imagination? Well, love is the ability to see past all that exists into that which does not yet exist in the physical. Love looks past all of the illusion. It looks past all of the experiences that we have about ourselves and sees the foundation upon which all those things could be based. Now, in fact, they are based on it. It's just that they went in a little different direction. They say of insanity and brilliance, genius, that is, they're right on the edge of a knife. You fall one way, you fall into insanity. You fall the other way, you fall into genius. Now, which way are you falling? Well, you see, it's not that it's bad. It's not that it's good. In fact, this is the thing we have to work on in our consciousness, not to have thoughts of something being bad and something being good. We want to always work on the idea that all is God, all is beautiful, all is wonderful. Now, if all is wonderful, and we have an illuminating idea, for instance, we think of a better mousetrap. We think of a better way to do something. Or just as Ellen was saying the other day, she says, Herb, where do you come up with these ideas for the table here? Where do you come up with these ideas for the little gadgets around the house here that make it more pleasant to live and work and express in? And well, love does that. Love, in that, I look at the circumstance and I think to myself, yeah, what would be a good way to solve that? Then I let it go. And love just sort of percolates it inside of me. And all of a sudden the idea comes in the strangest times. And I think I should take one of these little tape recorders with me all the time, because whenever it comes, I should turn it on. Then I don't have to worry about writing it down or remembering it or anything. And many times I get a thought and then I don't carry it out when I come back. And so then days later, maybe a year later even, it comes up again and says, why didn't you use me? You know, oh, yeah. And I write it down quickly because I don't want to have it slip by me again. But they do slip by us. Mm-hmm. They slip by us because of the barrage that goes on around them. Now, what's the barrage that goes on around love thoughts? The barrage of confusion. The barrage of distraction. I tell you, keep your mind one-pointed on the fact that I like me. That's no big deal. I like me. It's for you. It's not taking from anybody else. It's not doing something that's improper in any way. You just say, I like me. Mm-hmm. Now, why do you allow yourself to be distracted? Why do you allow yourself to be distracted about washing dishes? Why do you allow yourself to be distracted about typing on a typewriter or writing or doing anything? When you say, I like me, that should be so pure, so beautiful, so powerful that, boom, your whole life jumps into action for you liking yourself. Now, distractions are not just the simple little things like like washing dishes and what have you. Distractions are also when we get angry at somebody else for doing something. You see, I don't think we really recognize how crafty this other aspect of our nature is. The other aspect of our nature, we call our consciousness, and then there should be another word for it. It's not subconscious or anything like that, but it should be another word for it. It's anti-consciousness. that's a good word, anti-consciousness. Okay, so we have the beautiful idea, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. And then the anti-consciousness comes in and says, but you're stupid, you know. You have no friends. You have nobody in the world who cares about you. You had a birthday and you didn't receive one card, you know. What makes you think you're so likable? It doesn't bother me. I like me. That's all that matters. But do you say that? Or do you say, yeah, that's right. Nobody sent me a card. Nobody cared. You know, and you fall right into the anti-consciousness thought. That's a good word. Anti-consciousness. You fall right into that thought. And you don't want to do that. Because you're empowering the anti-consciousness to belittle the I like me, the consciousness stuff, which brings you peace, happiness, harmony, abundance, joy, and all good things. But the anti-consciousness, if you were to stop and say, hey, anti-consciousness, what are you trying to do here? You're trying to belittle what I'm doing? I know what I'm doing, and I don't have to pay any attention to you. Because if I don't pay any attention to you, you're going to shrivel up and die. You're going to disappear from my life. You're going to atrophy. You're not going to be powerful over me. But if I think about you, if I give you attention, I'm going to give you power so you can continue to be a negative influence in my life. Now, do I want that or not? Hey, anti-consciousness, out. No, I don't want that. But you see, when you, and it's not anti-consciousness is bad. That's its job. That's its purpose. That's its existence, is to divert your attention, to challenge you, to keep you from experiencing your good. Now, a lot of parents do that. In fact, they do that more often than they know, not unkindly, but they do that more often than they know. They say, at your age, you know, why are you reading these books that are far beyond your level of reading? Get back to where you belong. You know, you need to have this basic foundation. The child needs what it is drawn to. They're looking at pornographic things. Well, that's another thing. Why are they drawn to that? Have you made something else much more charming than the pornographic things? They'll drop that stuff when they get into something much more charming. If you get them working on a computer, and you get them working on the puzzles, you get them working on games and things, they won't be interested in that other. But why are we interested in that other? Because the anti-consciousness attraction is coming in and saying, hey, watch this stuff, isn't this cool, you know, pretty neat, you know, it really turns your genes on, or your, you know, whatever, your sensitivities on, you know, wow. And hey, anti-consciousness, be gone. Hey, have another drink. Hey, anti-consciousness, be gone. I said no to the first one, and I'm certainly going to say no to the second one. And if you force me to take a third one, I will accept it, and I will hold it. I don't have to drink it. These people who pour their glass of wine into a potted plant are so silly. They should just hold on to it. You know? Oh, I have my wine right here. You know, and hold on to it. And then when anyone wants to fill it, oh, I've already got some, thank you. Or someone gave me some already, thank you. You don't have to say when, 2 hours ago, you know. But if you're going to go to a cocktail party where drinking is a thing, and you don't have the strength to say, I would like a glass of lemonade, please. I would like a glass of orange juice. I'd like a glass of water. Water? You're at a cocktail party. Hey, I'm invited to come here because of me, not because of what you're serving. I am master of myself. Thank you very much. And so, can't you just imagine some woman who's part actress, and somebody comes and says, come on, you got to have a drink, just a little drinky. And she says, this man is forcing me to drink. This man is forcing me to drink. And, what a row going. And everybody look at her and say, what's going on over there?
He's forcing me to drink. He's forcing me to drink this alcohol, and I don't want to drink this alcohol. And, but how can I stop drinking? And they'll say, my God, I wish I had said that. I wish I had the courage to object so strongly, so powerfully. And they're going to go home and tell their husbands and wives. They're going to go home and tell their families. They're going to tell their bosses and their world. Do you know, one woman at the cocktail party, they were encouraging her to have a drink, you know, because it's a cocktail party. And she said, no, I'll have water. You can't drink water here. You can't drink coffee. And she just let out a tirade in such a beautiful manner that all of us got a message. In fact, I don't know that any of us really drank very much after that, because we realized, hey, stand up for it if you don't like this stuff. Why go to a cocktail party, but to drink cocktail, because that's what a cocktail party is. But you go there because you want to converse with people. You want to talk. You want to be friendly and so forth. And the wine is supposed to loosen you. Well, now that part's not bad. But you don't want to get schnuckered. You don't want to get so loose that you are not able to understand what you're doing. You do understand it, because you never would do anything drunk that you wouldn't do sober, I say. And some people disagree with me, and that's fine. But the thing is, love lights all fires. And this woman who would be shouting out like this in this very dramatic way, she knows what she's doing. She's not worried. She's not drunk. But she realized that if she puts forth this dramatic act, she'll perhaps cast a spell, especially for herself. And people say, I don't ever offer that woman a drink again. What a wonderful thing. Don't ever offer that woman a drink. You know, orange juice or something, but never a cocktail. She is deathly against it. Well, man, if we could all be deathly against our adversary. If we could all be deathly against any anti-consciousness that wants to come in and discourage us from following what we know is that which is lit by the light of love in us, the desire for doing things. And as I said, parents so often mess their kids up by saying, you're not ready for this yet. A kid is ready for whatever he asks, and you give it to him, and he will take whatever he's ready to receive. And you may give him far more knowledge and wisdom than he can receive. But you got to stop. We are doing a disservice to ourselves and our world by not growing up. All of us here are mature adults, and we don't even know what children are today. Children have so much brilliance in them. They have so much genius in them. They know so much more than we ever knew at our age of maturity, that they are yet in their immaturity age. They know it, and they don't judge it, and they don't worry about it, and they're not hung up on it because their hormones and so forth aren't ready to act upon it, and that's great. But the thing is, we must begin to recognize that when our children are ready to say, I want to learn, we go with them and learn. Like when Mark wanted to learn to fly, I said, great! We went immediately to the airport and start taking lessons. Now, every parent can't always jump on whatever their child asks for, especially if they have a lot of children, you know. And so they have to use wisdom, and they'll say, okay, we will go down to the library. We'll get books on flying. And you read these books on, from the FAA of what the rules are for flying, and because that's part of your testing. And then after you've done that, then we'll go down and take the examination. And we don't have to buy courses, and we don't have to have teachers and stuff like that, because you're brilliant. Ta-da-ta-da. And the guy will rise to that brilliance. He will rise to it because you have lit the fire in the wonderful way. The fire was sort of there already to fly, but you light it even further by saying, look at the library here. They're all there. They're all there free for you to read and study. And copies of the examination are there for you to read and study so that you know what type of questions they ask and you know what the answers are supposed to be. And you read and study that, you see. But the anti-consciousness wants to say, it's too advanced for you. You're only 13 years old, you're only 10 years old. My goodness, I think they ought to lower the age of driving and a few other things, because kids nowadays, they can do things that we couldn't even begin to think of doing. And it's wonderful. The only reason that they should keep the age of driving perhaps where it is because the kids have to get tall enough to sit behind the wheel. If they're too short, it's kind of difficult. But
So they grow taller too now.
And they grow taller earlier too. That's true too. That's true too. But we live in a wonderful world, and love lights all fires. And let it light the fires of imagination, creativity, of love, of sharing, of genius, of goodness. And when you do, wow, you got the whole world
in your hand.
In your hand, just waiting for you to make love to it and say, come with me to the Kasbah. I love you.
Love you.